you've probably seen more than a few American flags displayed around your town to mark the 4th of July holiday. Good timing for a new book about flags, which comes out tomorrow. A Flag Worth Dying For, The Power and Politics of National Symbols, takes a look at the stories of dozens of the world's flags, both past and present. Tim Marshall is the author, and he joins us now from London. Tim, welcome.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Well, you begin the book with this iconic moment, the raising of the American flag over the wreckage of the World Trade Center after 9/11. And that sets up the whole premise of the book, that flags have this emotional impact over us. Is that right?
That's right. And also, I wanted to make sure from the start that people didn't think that flags were an old-fashioned thing, because then they're clearly not. And what was it that brought America together in those terrible days? It was the symbol of the nation, of the Union. And so I argue from the beginning, these things are emotionally as important as they ever were. You can have all sorts of arguments about the pros and cons of nationalism, but you can't argue that it's not still front and center.
Huh. Well, we are in the midst of the most patriotic holiday in the United States, so let's talk about the American flag. Earliest iterations of it came about in the 1760s, and that's before the United States even became a country.
Right, and that's why, you know, it became what it became. For example, you go all the way back to the Sons of Liberty. They, it is thought, flew a nine-striped flag during the Boston Tea Party, and that, it is thought, was a prototype for what became Stars and Stripes. A lot of this is lost in the murk. It's clear that the 13 states that had the temerity, Peter, the temerity to rise up against us and kick us out, that was clearly, you know, why there are 13 stripes. And so then woven into it is this history and this symbol of freedom. And then obviously we know what happened, unfortunately, in 1776. I mean, we can make United States Great Britain again, if you choose. I digress. But in 1777, that's when it actually became officially, as we know it, the Stars and Stripes, with some stars to be added on later. But in 1777 is when it reaches the iteration that we now recognize.
Well, maybe you could clear up some confusion for some of us here in the United States, because a lot of kids grew up in school, were taught that Betsy Ross, the seamstress who made flags for the Pennsylvania Navy, was the designer of the original American flag. But is that true?
Maybe. Her family says yes. Others say no. It is not for me, despite writing a book about it, it's not for me to make that judgment. It is for proper historians to look into it. I like the Betsy Ross story. I'm not even convinced it's important, the actual fact of the matter, because when it comes to these things about flags, actually legends are of equal importance. Mm. They become the truth that you believe in.
All right, well, 1912, President Taft comes in, and he's responsible for codifying the design that we know it as today. Mm. And actually, this is interesting. There are laws for handling the flag according to the flag code. And, you know, I remember my father, who was in the military, always warning me that a flag could not touch the ground. That was a really big deal. So, you know, what are some of the other flag laws in the United States that we must adhere to?
You have more laws about your flag than almost any other country. For example, within the military, if it's tattered and torn, it has to be given either a decent burial or actually cremated. Mm-hmm. And the laws about that cremation ceremony go into several pages. How many people should be there? What should be said? A spare chair for somebody that has passed on that would have liked to have been there and valued it and all the rest of it. And what got me really interested in all this is I used to be a news reporter, and I was in Afghanistan and Iraq quite a lot. And in the States, I went to quite a few, very sadly, of the funerals at Arlington. And the ceremony there where the flag is folded so many times, and each fold is symbolic of something. And then the very last fold is symbolic as the stripes, the daylight, is folded into the darkness of night. And at that point, the flag becomes a triangular shape, a cockade shape, which is because that's the shape of the hat that the first revolutionaries fought against the British.
Hmm.
So all this historic symbolism swirls around in your flag.
It does evoke emotion in this country. For some people, it makes them feel very patriotic. For others, it feels like they're very left behind in this country. But what about your country, Great Britain, the Union Jack? Do people have a similar relationship to it?
Similar but very different in that you are more openly patriotic. We do not tend to fly flags from our front porches or our backyards. It's just not done. But that doesn't necessarily mean the British are not patriotic. It's just that it's done in a different way, in a more official way. It is left mostly to the state and state buildings to fly the flags. So we have a different relationship, but underlying it is the same thing. And I take your point about people might be ambivalent. And we've had a particular problem here where the far right hijacked both the cross of St. George, the English flag, and the Union Jack, the British flag, for their own purposes. And it became a bit embarrassing sometimes to fly it because people would
assume
you were from the... Yeah, which is... But it is so, so unfair because what it is supposed to stand for now is liberty and justice for all, one nation under God. Now, the fact that you don't always live up to that, and no nation can ever live up to its values, it doesn't mean that that flag does not stand for those values, and you can still support those values.
Well, look, you know, some flags are very old, others are very new. 1994, South Africa was emerging from apartheid. Nelson Mandela had just been elected president. After 7,000 designs for a new flag had been rejected, people were starting to get a little bit concerned. They had this urgent need for a flag, and then who comes in but a 74-year-old retiree named Fred Brownell. Who is he, and how did he save the day in South Africa?
A retired civil servant who knew about heraldry and was interested in flags. They had 5 weeks to go before the transition of power from the de Klerk apartheid regime to the Nelson Mandela era. They had 100,000 flagpoles with the flag of apartheid, basically.
Mm.
And after these rejections, they basically rang up Fred and said, can you help? He very quickly put together the famous, now famous South African flag with the Y shape. It's got the red, the gold, and the green Pan-African colours. It's got the colours of the ANC, the political party, and the Inkatha, the Zulu political party there. The chili red was a nod back to the original flag because, of course, you had to incorporate the white population as well. He faxed it to Mandela. Of course, faxes in those days were black and white. This is 1994. I think, okay, I like the look of it, but what colour is it? And they had to send instructions. They had to run down to a shop, buy some crayons, colour in this flag, show it to Mandela. He said, fine, let's go for it. The flag factory in South Africa could only do 5,000 a week with 5 weeks to go. You do the math. They need 100,000. So they had to actually send out back to the Netherlands, to the Dutch, and they came up with 100,000 flags, and they just managed to run them up the flagpole for the day he took power.
Huh. Fascinating. Well, there are also flags of fear, as you put it. The flag of the Islamic State on a black background. It has a white circle on it with Arabic script inside. ISIS would say what? This flag is inspired by the Prophet Muhammad.
That's right. They declared it their flag in 2007. It's not really their flag because that would be unfair because it's square because the flag of Muhammad was thought to be square. It's black because the flag of Muhammad was supposed to be black. And on it is written the Shahada, the expression of faith that there is only one God. Now, all those things are not ISIS. They are all Islamic. And so it's unfair of ISIS to hijack it. But nevertheless, it has become their symbol. It screams radicalism. If you look at the way it's written, it's in a very ragged script. And what the message they're sending, along with their barbarity of the way they behave, which goes back, you know, to the 6th, 7th centuries. So as well as acting like that, their flag actually suggests that they're going back to the original and back to the 7th century.
You write that it evokes fear. It is a flag of evil fanaticism. That may be true for us in the Western world. But do you think that when ISIS fighters see that flag fluttering in the distance, that they feel uplifted and inspired in much the same way that, say, Americans do when they see the Stars and Stripes?
Yes, you have to accept that. And you know, I don't buy this argument that this is nothing to do with Islam. It is not the form of Islam that the vast majority of Muslims in the world follow, but it does spring from it. It is absolutely a warped, and nearly every Muslim I know, every Muslim I know actually, detests ISIS. But you're right to say that it will inspire them.
So as you looked at the Islamic State flag and dozens of others around the globe as you wrote this book, what did you learn about patriotism?
That patriotism, for me, and in the context of looking at the flag and having an affinity with it, is a love of one's own and a respect for others. But nationalism is a love of one's own and a contempt for others. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is that we are experiencing an explosion of nationalism all over the world. And I think it's important to know these symbols, to recognize them, to know the power of them, and then to utilize them, that you can fight on this ground of identity, but stay the right side of the line. If you don't know what the hell it is you're looking at, and you cede those symbols to the other side, you will lose that battle. Mm.
Tim Marshall, his new book is A Flag Worth Dying For, The Power and Politics of National Symbols. Tim, thank you.
Thank you.